Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and thank you for joining us here on Africa Link live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Njiro.
And I am Abubakar Jallo with your responses and topics trending on social media.
Coming up, a persistent drought threatens millions of people in East Africa.
We used to harvest potatoes. When they were gone, we started to eat mangoes. But now there are no more mangoes. We do not know what to do anymore.
Members of the Economic Freedom Fighters in South Africa have been barred from parliament after being booted out last week. And President Zuma has said that he would not tolerate MPs and parties causing mayhem in parliament.
As adults, we can disagree ideologically, but we should not lose the track of the national interests.
And the World Food Programme reports that 20 million people will go hungry in the next 6 months. I'll bring you some of your responses to that a little later and some of what you've also been saying to Muhammad Buhari's medical stay in the UK.
Stay tuned for these stories and more. Let's first find out what's been happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. Foreign ministers from 20 of the world's leading nations began 2 days of talks in Bonn, Germany on Thursday to discuss current conflicts and ways to prevent future crises against a backdrop of uncertainty over the direction of US foreign policy. All eyes were on the new US Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who was making his diplomatic debut at the meeting. Speaking after bilateral talks with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, Tillerson said the US would consider working with Russia when it finds areas of practical cooperation that benefit the American people. He also urged Russia to meet its Minsk ceasefire commitments in Ukraine. Libya's UN-backed government has sent NATO a formal request for help in training and developing the country's armed forces. NATO Secretary-General Jens Stoltenberg said the alliance was looking into the request, which was about help for building security and defence institutions.
It is extremely important to have good institutions, Minister of Defence, Chief of Staff, Joint Chief of Staffs, because we need, Libya need that framework to be able to develop the forces and stabilize the country.
In Somalia, 2 civilians were killed in a mortar attack outside the presidential palace in Mogadishu on Thursday during a handover ceremony for the country's new leader, President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo. At least 3 mortars hit a residential area near the palace, and the explosions could be heard by those attending the ceremony. The Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the attack. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A rights organisation is reporting that an armed group executed at least 32 civilians and captured fighters in the Central African Republic in December. Human Rights Watch said rebels from the Union for Peace in the Central African Republic, the UPC, executed 25 people in Bakala in Oaka province on December the 12th after calling them to a school for an alleged meeting. Earlier that day, UPC fighters executed a further 7 returning from a gold mine. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has hailed a landmark trade deal with the European Union 1 day after it was formally approved by the European Parliament. Addressing the Assembly in Strasbourg, Trudeau presented the EU-Canada Pact as a blueprint for future trade deals and the outcome of shared history and values.
We know that in these times, we must choose to lead the international economy, not simply be subject to its whims.
For more news and information, please visit our website, dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Eunice Njiro.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo.
From the Horn of Africa to the Cape of Good Hope, drought continues to impact the east coast of Africa. According to the United Nations, at least 12 million people are now dependent on humanitarian aid in the region. In Kenya, Somalia and Ethiopia, the drought has been particularly severe in recent years, mainly because of the El Nino weather phenomenon. It has caused extreme weather patterns, meaning that rainy seasons did not materialize, devastating crops. This report by Gwendolyn Hilse is presented by Zilia Fröhlich.
Catastrophic images of whole herds of animals dying from the lack of water are being seen around the world. In some places, camel carcasses are being stacked up as even the world's most robust animal has not been able to survive the persistent drought. Somalia is the most hit country, with some death already being reported. According to the UN, more than 40% of the population depends on food aid. At least 360,000 children are malnourished, and about 70,000 of them are in danger of dying. But the situation is also felt in Tanzania, where almost 70% of the population depends on agriculture for their livelihoods. One herdsman shared the experience with DW.
Our livestock, which is our only safety net, has lost its value because it is so emaciated. If I sold this whole goat, I'd get a shell of corn, which I'd also have to grind, and I'd also need money for that.
Even in the otherwise green country of Burundi, the fields are dry this year.
You can see how dry it is here in Mwenga. The beans simply turn yellow in the fields. Everything has changed. We keep planting, but there's no harvest because of the drought. Some farmers are opting to leave their fields and go to the refugee camps to get something to eat.
Tens of thousands of families have left their homes in search of water and grazing land for their livestock. In Mozambique, it is a mixture of heavy rains in some areas and drought in others. Some have been forced to depend on fruits.
We used to harvest potatoes. When they were gone, we started to eat mangoes. But now there are no more mangoes. We do not know what to do anymore. We really don't have anything left.
The governments of Eastern Africa are raising the alarm. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has already asked the international community for help, but also said that his government would do everything to help the affected communities. Abbas Gullet, Secretary General of the Red Cross in Kenya, he says it is time for Kenyans to help each other.
The Kenyans are now active in helping their brothers and sisters. If each Kenyan donated about $32 a month, then we could feed a family of 5 to 6 people.
A report by Gwendolyn Hilse.
Now, Eunice, we've had a couple of responses to this particular story, especially NGOs who've been tweeting about this drought situation in East Africa. We've had tweets from World Vision, the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization, and you name them. Greenpeace, for example, said the drought in Kenya has raised serious alarm bells. And Sarah Ramsey responded saying, how awful, how can it be remedied? You also have the a response from DFID, that is the UK's International Development Organization, saying that the UK is playing a leading role in the international response to the ongoing drought in East Africa. People desperately need our support. And we have Ronald Kawesi, who said climate change has started to bite. We need to implement solutions faster than ever.
Thank you, Abu. Now to Europe. G20 foreign ministers have started 2 days of talks here in Bonn with a focus on global development. Germany, which is hosting the talks, wants to keep up momentum on the 17 so-called sustainable development goals, which the international community agreed to aim for by 2030. All eyes have been on US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who has made his diplomatic debut at the G20 gathering. Tillerson met Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, and this was his reaction to their meeting.
Foreign Minister Lavrov and I had a productive meeting. We discussed a range of issues of mutual concern. As I made clear at my Senate confirmation hearing, the United States will consider working with Russia when we can find areas of practical cooperation that will benefit the American people. Where we do not see eye to eye, the United States will stand up for the interests and values of America and her allies. As we search for new common ground, we expect Russia to honor its commitment to the Minsk agreements and work to de-escalate the violence in the Ukraine.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Now, DW's Peter Hille has been monitoring the meeting, and he now joins us. Peter, support for Africa is also on the agenda. So what exactly are the leaders going to be discussing?
Well, I put that question to Dr. Clara Brundi from the German Development Institute, and here's what she had to say.
The German G20 presidency puts a strong focus on cooperation with Africa, but it remains to be seen how much the issue will actually feature in the summit declarations in Hamburg in July. We see, of course, many other urgent challenges on the agenda, but from the perspective of the German Development Institute, it remains a key issue to focus attention on Africa. It's crucial to cooperate with South Africa as a G20 member, but it's also important to improve outreach activities towards other countries.
But I am a bit skeptical, given all the other concerns in the world right now, especially with the new US administration. We'll see just how prominently Africa will feature in the summit declaration in July in Hamburg.
So could you also fill us in on what other issues are on the table?
Well, besides Ukraine and Africa, of course, the conflict in Syria will be on the table, I think. But I wouldn't expect any tangible proposals for peace from this meeting today when it comes to Syria. And then, of course, climate change, where many fear that the US is backing out of the Paris Agreement, combating climate change. You know, in my opinion, the main benefit of this meeting today will actually be the opportunity to build up some trust between the new US administration and the rest of the world. I wouldn't expect any other huge outcomes.
DW's Peter Hille. When President Jacob Zuma delivered his State of the Nation address last week, he was not only interrupted and disrupted in an unparliamentary manner, but also described as a failed president who should step down immediately. Over the past 2 days, during a debate on Zuma's address by MPs, the ruling ANC and opposition members were once again involved in name-calling and crude insults. Zuma responded to the debate on Thursday afternoon, and Zubri Govende reports from South Africa.
Finally, I know if our heroes like Ruth First, Helen Joseph, Beni Mulukwani, Christiani...
It was against this kind of degeneration in Parliament over the past 2 days that President Jacob Zuma took to the podium on Thursday afternoon to respond to the debate over his State of the Nation address a week ago. His speech escaped being disrupted once again because of the absence of members of Julius Malema's Economic Freedom Fighters. They have been barred from Parliament for 10 days after they were violently booted out last Thursday. Zuma said such behavior would not be tolerated.
We again appeal to those MPs and parties that have taken a decision to cause mayhem in the House to use available democratic mechanisms to express themselves within the bounds of decency and decorum. As adults, we can disagree ideologically, but we should not lose the track of the national interests.
Once again, President Zuma said radical economic transformation and land redistribution for the good of the black majority would continue with the full support of all role players. 23 years into the new South Africa, black South Africans and Africans in particular cannot sit on the sidelines of the economy.
The message of SONA 2017 is clear and simple. The political freedom gained in 1994 must be accompanied by economic freedom for the black majority in this country and the Africans in particular. We are not going to be apologetic about that. It is part of the South African story, a historic fact.
Zuma said that his government was shocked at some of the reactions of the opposition members who said that radical economic transformation in South Africa would not succeed. He said this was meant to retain the present racial status quo in the country.
That is a confirmation that some of our compatriots are determined to defend and protect the status quo and ensure that the ownership, control and management of the economy remains skewed in favor of a racial minority.
The South African president said much more must be done to ensure that black people are assisted in becoming large-scale commercial farmers. This would be in the interests of food security. Radical economic transformation, said Zuma, would be broad-based across all sectors of South African society. This did not translate into hatred of whites, but a reflection of true reconciliation in the new South Africa.
Subri Govender. You're listening to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo with on the social media desk.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, fighting alcoholism in Cape Verde.
Qual é a maior incidência hoje de mortes?
What is the main cause of death in Cape Verde? Alcoholism. What is the number one cause of car accidents? Alcoholism is.
And I'll be looking into some of your responses to Buhari, who is still on sick leave, and Donald Trump's Africa policy.
So do keep it right here at Africa Link. The effects of Cyclone Dineo, now downgraded to a tropical depression emerging from the Mozambican coast, could be felt hard in Zimbabwe if the country does not get enough resources to avert the impact. Zimbabwe's Civil Protection Department does not have enough budgetary resources to help citizens who might be affected. Cyclone Dineo has already hit mainland Mozambique, leaving a trail of destruction, and is expected to reach Zimbabwe within 12 hours. DW correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushaniri, filed this report.
Heavy storms like this have hit Zimbabwe in the last few weeks, but now the situation is expected to worsen because of the impending cyclone Dineo that has already affected neighboring Mozambique. The south and western parts of Zimbabwe are predicted to record rainfall in excess of 100 millimeters within 24 hours. Zimbabwe's neighbors, South Africa and Namibia, are also bound to be affected. The Meteorological Services Department of Zimbabwe predicts that the cyclone may go down to a storm as it reduces speed inland, but impact remains the same. Head of Zimbabwe Public Weather Services, Tichaona Zinyemba, explains.
We're expecting the depression to affect Zimbabwe more from this evening, peaking to by tomorrow. And this is when we're expecting the heavier rains and the potential flooding that might actually happen in those areas that it is expected to impact more. Before it entered Zimbabwe, it's still in Mozambique and it's causing huge havoc. The wind speeds that are within the system are still of the order of well over 100 kilometers an hour. People have to be careful.
Zimbabwe Department of Civil Protection has intensified circulation of mobile telephone alert messages to citizens, warning that the effects of the cyclone could be dire owing to lack of financial resources. Melis Banda is the Civil Protection Department's Principal Administrative Officer responsible for disaster risk management training programs.
We always prepare for cyclones. Our budget this year to our Minister of Finance was 5 million, but we got 286,000.
Zimbabwe is facing critical cash shortages that have impacted on public service institutions. According to the Civil Protection Department, 111 people drowned and 12 were struck by lightning since the onset of the rain season in October 2016. Several dams have breached walls, and the department is appealing to citizens to avoid traveling in the days the impending cyclone is expected in Zimbabwe. International aid organizations are on high alert to assist in the event of a disaster. The European Union head of delegation to Zimbabwe, Ambassador Philippe Van Dam, told me that EU humanitarian arm will be ready to assist.
If indeed we have catastrophic events like in the past when we had floods or something like that, we have humanitarian agency which is called ECHO, E-C-H-O, which indeed can mobilize support at very short notice, depending on how the situation evolves. But let's remain optimistic.
Hopes are weather conditions should change to ease the effects of the cyclone Dineo in Zimbabwe. In 2000, cyclone Eline, with speeds up to 120 kilometers per hour, hit Zimbabwe with devastating effects. A total of 136 deaths were reported, while 59,184 homes were destroyed during a period which lasted for almost a month and termed the worst in 50 years.
Privilege Mushaniri reporting.
Now, Eunice, the storm has already made landfall in Mozambique on Wednesday evening and battered two coastal towns. We've been getting responses on this, and Levi Falula said, "Denial is not a joke, guys. People are dying." And then Eugene said, "If only Denial could make her way to Nkandla, hashtag pay back the money."
So, Abu, could you please remind us what was Nkandla?
Nkandla is basically referring to South Africa's president, Jacob Zuma, for spending lavish money on his private home at Nkandla. So basically, that's what they are making this reference to. And then you have Monchi here who said, then Zuma will take more money to rebuild Nkandla. And then Miroso said he will also take more money, more taxpayers' money. We have Barry Rooks who said, "We are lucky this tropical cyclone is called Deneo, because if it was called Kelly Kumalo, we would have all been dead without a trace." It's also referring there to Kelly Kumalo is a superstar singer and actress in South Africa. And those are some of the responses to that story.
I'm sure we'll come back to that.
Uzone.
Welcome to Uzone, the special segment for young listeners. This week we go to Tanzania, where Human Rights Watch reports that at least 1.5 million Tanzanian adolescents are not attending school. In a new report, they found out that 40% of Tanzania's youth do not make it to the secondary school level. Tanzania took a major step by abolishing school fees in December 2015, but the number of school dropouts remains relatively high. Zipporah Nyambura brings us more.
Education has been a national priority for Tanzania. In 2005, primary education was made free, followed by secondary education 10 years later. However, a new report by Human Rights Watch states that many children drop out of school at primary level, with girls being the most affected. At least some 8,000 girls drop out of school each year due to pregnancy and early marriages. Ellen Martinez is a researcher in the Children's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. She spearheaded the research.
NGOs point out that it's closer to 15,000 girls who drop out annually. And this is a huge public health issue across the country.
17-year-old Tanzanian Jennifer Nielsen was forced out of school in class 7.
I could not finish school because of hardships at home. My parents did not have money to take me to school. They tried to force me to get married, but I refused. So I ended up working as a domestic worker.
Martinez says a policy that does not allow children who fail in primary school to proceed on to secondary has locked out many young people from realizing their dreams. Since 2012, exam results have affected approximately 1.6 million children's access to secondary education. Most have not been allowed to retake Standard 7, the final year of primary school, once they fail. Once out of school, many adolescents lack realistic options to complete basic education or pursue vocational training.
And what we found is that for most of the students we interviewed who go to schools that are often under-resourced, don't have enough teachers to teach them core subjects, they sit an exam that they have not studied properly, they have not been taught the subject. And so often many of them end up failing these exams and dropping out of secondary school.
In 2005, Tanzania committed to build secondary schools in various parts of the country. But in remote and rural areas, students walk up to 25 kilometers to school. The report, I Had a Dream, sums up that free education is not enough to keep kids at school. Most families cannot afford other scholastic requirements like books, uniforms, or even transport. The government should also do more to address crowded classrooms.
A report by Zipporah Nyambura.
Speaking Out.
In this week's Speaking Out, we meet Honorio Fragata from Cape Verde. He has been speaking out for alcoholics in his country. The World Health Organization says that alcoholism has become a serious health threat in the West African country, thus hampering development efforts. For the last 20 years, Fragata has been helping recovering alcoholics who often face stigma and their rights often trampled upon. This report by Guilherme da Silva has been adapted for Africa Link by Isaac Mugabe.
Uh,
At El Shaddai Rehabilitation Center, Janison Fernandez, a former alcoholic, is transforming wood into a cupboard using his carpentry skills. 9 months ago, he was struggling with alcoholism. Then he came for help at the rehab center that is located in southern Cape Verde. Now he works from dawn till dusk, 7 days a week. The cupboard is a gift for his mother.
She helped me very much. She told me to stop drinking alcohol to overcome this addiction. She supported me a lot and advised me. And now that I'm here in this rehab center, I think she'll be very happy with what I'm doing for her.
When he was young, Janinson dreamt of being a lawyer. By the age of 19, he started drinking heavily and spent all his money on alcohol.
I was half dead because I was beaten up by thugs 2 or 3 times. I almost died. I was hospitalized and in a coma. And then I just thought about my daughter because I like her very much. I think about her the whole day.
For Honorio Fragata, who founded the rehab center in 1996, there is a lot more work that needs to be done. And by speaking out on behalf of the alcoholics who are recovering at his center, he hopes that the government and well-wishers will also try to help them reintegrate and live meaningful lives.
What is the main cause of death in Cape Verde? Alcoholism. What is the number one cause of car accidents? Alcoholism is. What is behind gender-based violence and broken families? Alcoholism.
More than 3,000 people have passed through the center since it was founded, but at the moment it's not running at full capacity. This makes it difficult to pay electricity, water and food bills. Many patients stay at the center after recovery because they can't find a job. Janilson Fernandez is among those struggling to leave El Shaddai. He has not given up the hope of making a living through carpentry and taking care of his family.
Guilherme Correa da Silva filed that report.
Now, a quick update here. The World Food Programme has warned that more than 20 million people are at risk of dying from starvation within the next 6 months. The report said that wars in Yemen, northeastern Nigeria and South Sudan have devastated households and driven up prices, while a drought in East Africa has ruined the agricultural economy. We will be following this story on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Keep your comments coming there. And now, in response to this story that Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari is still stuck in the UK, waiting for his medical results, has been having a lot of Nigerians talking on both various social media platforms.
So what are people like actually saying on this?
You actually find that it's been extremely politicized in the sense that you have Buhari supporters who are saying that the president should not be worried, and there are those who are saying that the president is dead. There is all this rumor out there. Let me give you some of those responses. We have Ekena Agbogu, who says, sir, good day. Please come out and talk to us. Let us know that you are healthy. Not just through chat, but live media. And we have General Dimka, who said, are they going to smuggle your cops into Nigeria in the middle of the night like they did with Yaradua? Nigerians are watching. Yaradua, that's the former president of Nigeria who died while he was in power. And then we have Ahmed Yakubu, who said, Mr. President, we support you. May God help you come back safely into your country.
Okay, apart from Nigeria, Abu, what else are people commenting on?
Actually, quite a lot. There's this story about Donald Trump in Africa. Well, not, he's actually not going to Africa. Mm-hmm. It's basically about his Africa policy. Trump is basically targeting a particular legacy of Barack Obama. That is this project, which is called the AGOA program, which is basically a program set up by President Obama to help African products be imported without tariff to the United States. The report goes like, U.S. President Donald Trump is going after one of Barack Obama's Africa legacies. AGOA is the project actually seeks to promote stable economic development, but Trump questions whether this program is actually promoting democracies. We have this tweet by this user who says, Trump is giving a deafening silence to Africa. And another user says, Trump sees Africa as a big inner city. We have Christos Rotas, who says, we all became deaf because of the loud work of Obama. That's quite sarcastic there.
Well, thanks a lot, Abu, for those comments. We do ask our listeners to continue writing and sending their comments on our Facebook page. That does it for this edition of Africa Link. As always, you can get more stories by visiting dw.com/Africa or simply follow us on our DW Africa Facebook page. From me, Eunice Wanjiru.
And from me, Abubakar Jallo.
Goodbye and take care.